and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. This is a show where we talk to creators and fans of actual play podcasts and streams about why they enjoy them. Hey, Lauren.
Yeah?
What is your favorite GM-less RPG?
Ooh, there are a lot of really good ones.
There are.
So this is a hard question. Favorite GM-less RPG that I've actually played is this is sort of a cop-out answer, but Good Society has rules for, like, if the facilitator also is going to play a major character.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, not quite so GM-less because there is one player who has a different role than the other players, but you're also, it's also sort of GM-less in the way that you all kind of share the load of playing NPCs and making narrative decisions. And I love Good Society so much. It's very good.
It's a very good game. I think mine's still The Quiet Year.
I have not actually played The Quiet Year yet.
I love drawing maps.
Yes, you do. My favorite GM-less game that I have not played yet is Laser Kittens.
Is that GM-less?
Yeah. It has a it's a rotating GM system. So every scene, each kitten gets to be the class captain and say what happens, and then you all kind of do it together and then like hand out like marks and awards and stuff. It's very good. Laser Kittens is so good, guys. It's on Kickstarter. They have an expansion on Kickstarter right now where you get more Laser Kittens, but you can also get the original Laser Kittens game. You should back that.
Hashtag not
sponsored. Not sponsored. I just really love Laser Kittens.
Speaking of things that aren't sponsoring us, this week we're talking to Brian about Follow the Leader. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. Hi.
So, what is Follow the Leader?
Follow the Leader is an actual play podcast, but unlike a lot of other actual play podcasts, they focus on playing exclusively GM-less games. So there is no... From arc to arc, there is no set story or kind of themes, but they focus on like small self-contained ideas or will expand upon an idea using multiple GM-less systems. And one of the fun things that I very much like about their game is that they do have a set cast of people that join in, and they have kind of a stock of characters that they play, but in different settings. So it's essentially like reading a plethora of AU fan fictions about these sets of characters.
That's great. I like that a lot. I have a campaign where we rotate GMs and systems with the same characters, and it's always really interesting to, like, how does this D&D character work in Ryutama? Very difficultly is the answer, by the way. That's really cool that they play a lot of GM-less games, and it's all, is like each game kind of its own story?
Yeah, more or less. They have kind of one kind of setting that they keep coming back to. That they're kind of building slowly over time, but they're building it using a bunch of different games. But for the most part, it's kind of its own different setting. So they'll play like Hacks of Firebrands that are set of like gods and mortals interacting, or vampires and werewolves and humans all trying to interact. Or they'll play something like Dream Askew that is kind of like set in a decidedly like queer post-apocalyptic setting that's very interesting. Or they'll do things like they'll play, you know, more familiar games like Kingdom or what was that one? Kingdom. They've definitely played Follow before. They've done Fiasco, that sort of stuff.
Very cool. Tell us a little bit about this world that they keep coming back to and some of the characters that we meet frequently.
So the world that they're kind of, that they've been coming back to and been building recently is, I guess it's kind of called like the City of Gulls. Because it started off as, I believe they played a Fall of Magic game that sort of set this up. And then they've played, I think it's called like Sunder or something like that. It was a version of they kind of played like a live version of a game that was meant to be played as like a play by post where like you on Twitter, or I think it was Google Plus is where it started out at. Rip Google Plus, I guess. The idea is that you set out, you as the person are like this adventurer traveling through this kind of like hostile land. And then when you put out a question and then the people out in the ether sort of respond with what to do, like what kind of happens next. So they kind of built that up to sort of set up these. There's a solo version of that and then a caravan version of that. They both play to kind of set up the City of Gulls. And then when they did the City of Gulls, I believe, I want to say that they played The Quiet Year to set up the city, to set up the actual City of Goals. So basically, it's kind of like this post-apocalyptic, magical sort of thing. So it's decidedly like medieval tech, but it's implied that there was something like grander or greater before this current period of time, whether that was like a modern world or if it was like a more advanced magical world has, you know, kind of yet to be determined. And I don't even know if it has been determined or if they have a plan for that or if they're just kind of letting it all fall out through games and such. But it's interesting. It's cool to watch, like, because I've used a lot of these same ideas to build worlds myself, because I'm not very good when I sit down to make a campaign or something like that of, like, I'm not a person who's good at nitty-gritty details. I'm definitely a big-picture kind of person, and I have definitely used a lot of these games to sort of, like, help me build and flesh out worlds that I've made. And it's really interesting to watch people kind of collectively come together and just, like, from zero build up this thing. It's very interesting to me.
The thing that I'm finding most interesting is a lot of those GM-less games that you've been mentioning have an endpoint. Like, they have a built-in endpoint, which
right.
I think is very important for the GM-less model, because when you're GMing a campaign, you set the endpoint. But when you're all playing, you need somewhere to end. Whether that's a flip of a card or, you know, you get to the end of the roadmap in Fall of Magic. Mm-hmm. There's always an endpoint, which to me, the fact that they're chaining games together makes a lot of sense, because you would have to for a GM-less.
Right. To be able to, like, do, like, deep dive world building, you would have to, you know, every time you kind of come, because they all, like you said, they do all come to an endpoint, which is very, like, that was kind of the thing that was very interesting to me, like, starting out listening to it. I'm almost 100% sure. Let me go ahead and pull up their feed real quick so I can be right about that. Okay, yeah, because the interesting thing that they did is that they started, because the City of Goals kind of story, I guess we'll refer to as like a storyline or what have you, is interesting because it does not, they kind of started off with like a game of Follow, where they were playing like a group of people in a theater, like they were a theater troupe trying to put on a play, like in a modern era. It was very interesting. Then they moved into sci-fi. And then they kind of got into the City of Goals, because I think, because I've talked to like a number of the cast on like Twitter and Discord and so on and so forth. I have talked to them about kind of like how they've put things together. And so a lot of times what they'll do is they'll stutter step some game. Like, they won't necessarily, they don't just like release everything as they put it out in order. They kind of, they move things around so they can form a little bit better ideas as they make them, because a lot of times in the moment they don't necessarily know that they're going to be like, this thing is going to flow into this next thing until they kind of get to a point where they're like, oh, we can do this, and then they sort of, you know, they put all the pieces of their proverbial puzzle together.
That's kind of cool. The way it's, because I guess you can't, like, a lot of times when you're talking about chaining games together, it's like, okay, well, this happened, and I really, this is happening a lot in my own life lately, just because I've been playing so much Starcross, but it'll be like, well, this D&D campaign ended, or this whatever campaign ended, and we really didn't get to explore this tension between these two characters, so now let's go play Starcross with them.
Right.
Or like on Pot of Love, where they were like, okay, we played Starcross, but we really liked these characters, so now we're going to go play Fog of Love with them. I like the idea in this one that it's kind of like they don't have a set plan for that. So they're just kind of like, oh, hey, this could totally take place in the City of Gauls, too. Let's fit that together.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a combination of things, because I'm sure they sit down, like, sometimes when they sit down to be like, all right, we're going to do X game or Y game. But the improv, like, they definitely embrace the yes and aesthetic of improv when putting together their ideas and their shows, which is I find very interesting. And then you can kind of combine that with, they also do some live streams as well, which are very fun to watch. So the live streams are usually less connected to some of the other stuff, though. I mean, that's to say, like, less connected to the other stuff in the sense that, like, the other stuff is also pretty disconnected, so, you know.
Yeah, live streams are kind of more traditional one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
This is a very weird thing. So it's basically a bunch of loosely connected series.
More or less, yeah.
That's kind of like spiderweb out.
Some of them are completely disconnected. Some have, like, more firm bonds or feature the same characters in the same roles. But a lot of times they'll also they just kind of do. A lot of times you'll see them playing like the same characters in completely different roles in completely different worlds. So they'll be playing like the same set of characters in like this hard-boiled sci-fi spaceship game in a Game of Kingdom. Then they'll be playing that same set of characters in like a Game of Fiasco where, you know, where everything goes wrong, basically. And then they'll be playing those exact same characters in a game of like Karma where they're all paranormal investigators. And just kind of seeing how that same personality type reacts to different stimuli.
Can you give us an example of that? Like, follow a character through all the different systems?
Probably one of my favorite characters is... So yeah, Mab plays Davey. Davey's like this kind of like foppish, well-off boy who is not a jerk. He is decidedly like this like pure little cinnamon roll that just bad things keep happening to. And so he was kind of first introduced in their kingdom game where they were playing, where they were kind of in space being pirates or what have you. And just terrible things kept happening to poor Davey. And then he shows back up in like the paranormal investigator like game of Karma that they did where like this house that is haunted is kind of reaching out and talking to them and kind of messing with them. And it's very interesting to see this sort of, in the sense, it's sort of the same reactions because he is decidedly like not take charge sort of personality, but it's interesting to see how the character grows with different stimuli. So you basically kind of reset them back to point one, then move forward with this kind of different set of stuff happening to them and watch them kind of grow in different ways.
That is kind of cool. The way you can be like, well, this character ended up totally scarred and like hard boiled because of this experience. But what if something else happened to them?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what if maybe something? And again, it's sort of like embracing that idea of like of essentially of fan fiction of doing like an AU where you're taking all your favorite characters from a show, plopping them into a high school setting, and then seeing what happens with them.
High school AU is the best AU, by the way.
It's true. We maybe did that in a crossover with them at one point, but because it is the best AU. But it's interesting to see that same concept and idea applied to an actual play, and I don't know if I've, like, I'm sure there are other podcasts more or less dedicated to GMless games. I know that Jeff Stormer over at Party of One uses GMless games on a very regular basis because that works better for his format. I don't know if I've seen anyone who's been like basically like remixing and reimagining their characters on such a regular basis as they do.
Yeah, that's definitely really interesting. And I mean, I kind of like that, especially because you can get so attached to characters and then, but like, I know for me, if a character's arc ends, when the campaign ends, I'm like, I can't just bring them back.
Right, like, they can't just, like, they had their whole story, they had, a full arc of growth and everything. It's one of those things where it's like, you could bring that character back for your own, like, personal enjoyment, but what narrative places can you push them once they've already reached the end of a story?
I do like the idea of kind of, like, the hard reset and then trying again somewhere else.
I have a character specifically who goes through one-shots with me. Like, it's actually a lot of fun. This idea of moving a character through different settings and times and places and situations, that works so well with something that you're always... Because there's that disconnect, right, between playing different games, that it's nice to have that common thread, that character that you remember from before. Not just as a performer, but as a listener as well. There's something nice about having people come back, like people that you know, and you're like, oh, I remember this guy, right?
Yeah,
you know, he's the
right
he's the foppish one. He's gonna start off real nice and then terrible things are gonna happen to them, and I understand this plot line, so I have a through line for the rest of this series that I can like hold on to.
And even in the games where they don't necessarily bring back familiar characters or anything along that, like they do a very good job of leaning into the mechanics or the concept behind the games that they're playing. Because they recently just sort of finished up their game of Divine Mundane was very interesting, because they sort of messed with Divine Mundane instead of it being about like gods and mortals. Divine Mundane is a hack of Firebrands that is about, instead of being about like mech pilots, is about like the relationship between like gods and mortals. And they kind of messed with that further to make it like the relationship between like vampires and werewolves and also one human, one regular human.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so that was very, so that was very interesting, kind of the world that they built up that had this like decidedly like urban fantasy, the like, you know, that sort of like True Bloody vibe to it, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's this like underlying underbelly of like supernatural interest going on, and seeing how the characters react or how they kind of like navigate all of those different avenues and everything like that, that they created a very like lived in and real feeling world. And, you know, just, I don't know, about 4 hours time, it feels like it's a thing that's existed forever, you know? So
yeah. So tell us a little bit about the cast of the show, because you mentioned that it's the same cast every time.
Well, it's not the same cast every time. They have a cast that rotates in and out of games, basically to make being able to record easier. Mm. But for the most part, it's, let me get the actual list of players together. Because I'm just god-awful with names. I'm really good with voices, but I am just terrible with names. So there's Han, Alex, and Jade, and Mab, and Dora, and I think that's pretty much everybody. I may be wrong.
I'm just going to shout out Kales, because Kales is on the Discord that I'm on.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah. I also forgot Kales, who's also on a Discord that I'm on. But yeah, so I think it's Kales, Mab, Sam, Jade, Dora, Han, and Alex. And they sort of all rotate in and out. I think the probably more, the, I guess, more consistent ones are Dora, Kales, and Jade. They show up probably the most often, with Mab doing a lot of work as well. And then, though, it's really hard to say, because there's not necessarily, like, any, like, main cast members, because they rotate so often. Because from what I can tell, they're just kind of, you know, they throw whoever can get together for, you know, who is interested in a game and can get together. They kind of like jump in and do some recordings. And I think they have guests on for their live streams as well, because I know one of our players, Danielle, has been on there doing random access memory. Or is it random access history? It's random access history. Yeah, sorry. Random access memory is actual RAM.
Cool. So they, because there are all these kind of different arcs, why don't you kind of talk us through maybe your favorite?
That is probably a toss-up between their third arc, where they're playing Fiasco, and they're up in space doing space stuff. They're like basically a bunch of ne'er-do-wells doing space things.
Ne'er-do-wells doing space things.
Yeah, you know.
I'm sorry.
That venerable genre of sci-fi.
It's just like... Is that the alternate title to, like, Star Wars?
I think so, yeah.
Or, like, Firefly?
Yeah, it's definitely the alternate title for Firefly, for sure.
Yeah.
They're playing a game of Fiasco, and for those who aren't aware, Fiasco is it's a storytelling game that has kind of, is built to act like a Coen Brothers movie, where basically everything's gonna go right until everything goes wrong and everything just spirals out of control near the end. Sort of like, you know, got like vibes of like Fargo or, I literally can't think of another Coen Brothers movie. You know, Fargo. Fargo. The only movie they've ever produced. It's that idea of like, they usually have like a feel of like a heist or an elevated slice of life vibe, you know, that sort of thing. And what you do is you use dice to build the relationships between your characters and how they all know each other. Because you roll this big pool of dice at the beginning, select all of your your character's relationship traits, and build the, you know, the kind of the air quotes set that you all will be interacting on, and then kind of go from there. And using the white and the, you kind of have like a white and a red dice. One means like this scene goes well. The other one means the scene doesn't go great. And you only have a finite number of each of those. And so you kind of have to play the game in that sort of sense. But basically what it is a bunch of people on a spaceship. They've got some drugs to sell. Some of them have some drugs to sell. Some of them don't know that there are any drugs to sell. Through the course of like, you know, a few weeks of, you know, going through space, everything just breaks down. It just breaks down terribly. There, you know, the everyone finds out about the score that's happening. People get double-crossed. Hearts get broken. Basically, almost everything ends in just, like, fire and chaos at the end. And it is... It's great because I like watching the sort of the way it plays out, because in your head you're kind of keep like I kind of know how a fiasco system works, so in my head I'm kind of keeping track of numbers and being like, oh, they can't, this is not good, like, oh no, they don't have enough things. Oh no. Like, just their character interactions are just, and this is true about almost, this is frankly true about all of their arcs, but the character interactions are just so good and they're so willing to just like commit to the bit. So like the characters definitely have this, like, there's like all of this hardcore sexual tension going on but played up solidly for laughs, or like really kind of headstrong dominant people just getting like hardcore put into place, and it's just it's like chef's kiss. It's good. It's probably my favorite arc, though I really also very much like their Dream Askew and their Divine Mundane games. Again, it's just because, like, they build such great worlds in those. Like, the Dream Askew or the Divine Mundane one, by the end of it, feels like this is just, like, a campaign setting that they jumped into, as opposed to something that they created, like, there at the table. And in Dream Askew, they create just, like, the super interesting post-apocalyptic version of San Francisco that is very, like, very, very interesting, with supernatural and technological elements. And I've got a soft spot for Dream Askew as a game on the whole, so that probably helps with that. But, like, they lean real hard into all of the conceits and the ideas that are laid out inside of that game, and, like, kind of push it to its zenith, I think, and it's very, very good.
What's kind of cool about not having one storyline that and one set of characters that they're all going through is that you can really lean into a system and what a system is good at, because I think we see a lot of in other podcasts where, you know, all of a sudden there's an arc, or other actual plays, sorry, for other games, like, there's an arc and you're like, well, I want to do this, I mean, let's pick on D&D, I want to do this really high, like, interpersonal narrative arc, but D&D isn't super suited for that. Like, it works fine, but, like, you can't really lean into what D&D is good at with that kind of stuff. And so with this, you can be like, you can lean into, you know, Fiasco being about people succeeding terribly because you're not already telling a story about heroes.
Exactly. And you also have the kind of the cushion of nothing that you're doing to this character is necessarily permanent. Like, once this arc ends, the arc ends, and you can just kind of reset when you guys go to somewhere else, or if you find that the character does end in an interesting place, maybe you guys can pick up in the same world sometime later and see what's going on with that character. But it allows you the freedom of just, like, leaning in and just going with it, because the consequences don't have as long of, like, a lasting impact. Because, like, and again, in, like, D&D, if you're starting out in a campaign, you've got this idea of this character in your head, you're going to make some choices that will maybe, like, wall off narrative avenues to you because you want to, like, push your character in a certain way. You know you've got a long arc to do that over, and you don't want to necessarily, like, paint yourself into a corner. But using, like, short GM-less games, you can paint yourself into that corner all day and see what happens when you get into that corner.
For longer campaign games, you're like, well, I don't want my character to die because I think they still have interesting things where they can do. Whereas if you're doing a short campaign with this, you could be like, well, what if this character does something and they die and it doesn't matter because you just, like, hard reset and can play them in the next session or, like, in the next game.
Right. Like, they can die in space like a hero, and then they're a zookeeper. And
yeah, I really do. I really feel the, like, the AU fanfiction. Do you know if that's something that they did on purpose, or is that just kind of what happens when you put characters in different universes?
I believe so. I mean, I know a lot of them write a lot of fanfiction, so I cannot imagine that wasn't just, like, already bubbling under the surface when they came up with this idea. I don't think I've ever asked them specifically if it's true, and I don't know if I've seen it anywhere. I want to say yes, but I don't know for sure, so I don't want to, like, I don't want to put anything on them that they haven't actually said. But I do know that all of them are pretty prolific fan fiction writers. And so I cannot imagine that those tropes and those ideas and those conceits aren't just like floating beneath the surface of pretty much all of the things that they do with their show.
I mean, I feel like fan fiction is just floating beneath the surface of everything we do in the tabletop space.
That's true.
TTRPGs are fan fiction.
Yeah, they're all our OCs, just floating.
Like. Yeah, they're all, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all fan fiction, especially like if you think about coming from some of these like, these really, like, the Blades in the Dark setting, or you know, these really established settings in D&D, and, like, that's, I would totally say that's, like, you know, you're just putting your OC in the world of Duskfall or whatever.
Right? And, like, listening to their game has definitely, like, pushed, like the games that I play to, like, do much more weird and interesting things, or just like curve, like when we reach the end of an arc or a storyline, or if we need to get something taken out, we have sort of set up the idea that like if we need to settle something that the rules that we have in place won't work with, we just turn into a different, like we just hard turn into a different game for a little while until we can get that sorted out, and then move back into our regular game and sort of embrace the idea that like, oh wait, this is our game, all fan fiction is canon, YOLO.
I have a question based, is Curse of Strahd just Strahd fanfic?
I mean, I think every campaign is basically Strahd fanfic because everyone just ships themselves with Strahd.
But they shouldn't.
Yeah, they shouldn't. No, but I mean, listen, he's real hot.
Shouldn't.
No, he's not. Oh my God. Oh my God, I don't understand. I don't understand.
We are very anti-vampire on this podcast.
That's not fair.
I mean, I am very anti-vampire, but like, I'm specifically anti-Strahd.
Listen, Strahd's a complete jerk monster, yeah.
When I played Curse of Strahd for the first time, the first thing I found, like, in Madame Eva's hut was the Tome of Strahd. And so you read his, like, incel, just fedora-wearing neckbeard diary.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is terrible. This is an awful person. And so I always assumed when people are like, oh, Strahd is hot, they're just basing it off the cover art or basing off, like, when you meet him for the first time in the module, he's very charming. And then I'm like, but have you read the Tome of Strahd yet? And they're like, oh, yeah, he's awful, but I'm still in love with him. And I'm like...
You gotta have your problematic vampire dictator faves.
I guess.
Do you?
Yeah, and the worst part is Tracy Hickman has, like, straight up been like, Strahd is a horrible person.
You should not like Strahd. What's wrong with you?
You should not like Strahd. Why do you like Strahd? And then, I mean...
I like him as a villain just because he is, like, reprehensibly evil.
He's so irredeemable. Like, you don't feel bad about just murderizing the hell out of him.
Yeah.
Which is what D&D is good for.
Sometimes you need that.
Anyway. So, I actually want to... I have a question about, you mentioned that, like, you know, you are the GM of a podcast.
Yeah.
And you, it's a D, primarily D&D, yes?
Okay, so it's
it
like a...
started as D&D?
Yeah, it's like a Voltron at this point.
Okay.
Because we started, okay, so our game started off as Dungeons & Dragons. But almost immediately from the jump, I'm not a huge fan of combat as the only way of progressing your character. Mm-hmm. And so... what I did almost initially in our game was I was like, oh, we're going to take the directives from the sprawl, and that's what you guys are going to use to get experience. So even when we're like, because I do a lot of talking heavy scenes, like even when we're doing that, you guys can get experience and progress and, you know, all that jazz.
So you essentially, like, you started D&D, but you, like, hacked it almost immediately.
Yeah, I hacked it immediately, yeah. So
my question is, has... being exposed to all of these GM-less games in Follow the Leader, like, has that changed the way that you GM in your own games?
I think on some levels, yeah, but I think one of the reasons that I connect with them is that they were ideas that I was already sort of messing with or, like, wanted to kind of do from the jump. Because when I started our D&D game, this is, in fact, our D&D game on this podcast is the only game I've ever DM'd, like, the first game I've ever DM'd. So, is a lot of, like, me, like, I don't know what to do! We're just gonna do whatever!
Which, by the way, is a rule in D&D.
It's true, yeah. are basically our defining rules are like, do whatever feels right, and if it can make it worse, do it. No. But the leaning really heavy into like the yes and or the collaborative building, because like I said, I'm not a detailed oriented person. I'm a big picture person who just kind of like lets this, like, I like to just kind of like let the ball roll and see where it rolls to, while like nudging it occasionally to get it to tell a coherent story. And the listening to like their games and doing that has definitely given me a lot of tools to use in that idea, because the Room Where It Happened conceit is like, it's a actual play podcast built on communal world building and having fun. And the communal world building is very important to me, because a lot of the ideas or the themes or the main overarching plots that we have in the game, I didn't come up with. I let the characters kind of dictate what kind of story we were going to tell and then roll from there. We regularly just invent new things that happen in the world or exist in the world, or they'll say a thing and that's canon now, basically. And that's kind of how we roll. And it's the same, and you kind of have to have the same sort of idea and approach when playing like a GM-less game, because it's not like, you know, in a GM-less game, it is literally no one person's story. You guys are all sitting down at the table to tell a collective story, and having a lot of the tools that they sort of show examples of on their show have definitely helped me a whole lot, and given me the courage to like to do things like play different, completely different games when we want to decide something, or when we want to take like a weird little sojourn or have a bottle episode or something like that.
One of the things that I found super freeing about like playing more GM-less games in my own GMing is like because I GM a D&D game, and there's all of this expectation to like world build and homebrew and do all of this stuff, and I'm like, I don't have time for that. So it's really freeing to play a game where you can be like, where someone's like, is there like a weird arcane tchotchke store? And you can be like, yeah. Yes, there is. Tell me about it. Which I think is something that GM-less games really, because there's no GM, you can just say it and it's true.
Right, exactly. And honestly, I think people who are out there who are like playing in or running more traditional like RPG games like Dungeons and Dragons or Pathfinder, or frankly even like Dungeon World or Blades in the Dark, Blades in the Dark has a little bit more of a rigid setting than Dungeon World, but going out, and if you haven't played a whole lot of GM-less games, maybe taking like a couple of game nights to sit down and play that with your group, because for one, it takes a lot of stress off of you as the person who's running the game, and two, it shows you that it can make your other games much more collaborative efforts, because it gives everybody kind of framework and tools to move forward when creating stories together.
Yeah.
You know what system does that very well? I've been reading Ryutama.
I have never played or looked at Ryutama before, but I've been hearing a lot about it, and I've been thinking about just buying it.
You should.
Ryutama's got two very interesting world-building tools that they have. They have the world-building document, which you sit down either on session one or once you've played the first arc. So the game actually recommends that if none of you have ever role-played before, to just play the game and then do the world-building document after your first journey.
Hmm.
And the world-building document, you name your world, like put down a fact, and then you hand the sheet off to the next person, and then they put in the next, like there's like a list of facts that you need to fill out. It's very basic things.
Yes, this is a Ryutama friendly podcast.
It's a very good system for exactly what it's doing. It's a very good system, I think, actually for teaching you how to GM very well, like especially if you're new, because it has all these guides. It's got like event sheets, it's got town sheets, but the scenario builders, where is the thing I'm looking for though?
Ethan is slipping through a book.
Heck yeah, super exciting.
This is the song that we sing while Ethan's okay. Slipping through a book.
So there's the world creation sheet, and you know, as the GM, you put the world name and the shape of the world. We have a friend who, I believe, they're playing on the inner side of a circle.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's four other facts that you pass around the table. And whoever, you know, whoever's next in line can pick which one they want to fill out. You have a couple pieces of world history, important countries, world threats, and world enigmas. Hmm. So things that haven't been answered. But then there's also town creation sheets. And you do the same exact thing where you go into a new town and You're like, okay, let's give this town a name, and I'm going to give it a population as the GM, and then I'm going to pass this around, and you're going to tell me who the rulers are, and the environment's like, and what kind of important buildings are there, and specialty goods, and sights, sounds, and scents, and threats. And you built that all together.
I rather like that.
Again, because you're mentioning, like, it takes some of the burden off of you, but it also makes players more invested.
Right, exactly.
Totally.
And that's the thing, it's like, not necessarily, like, people are going to be way more interested in playing in a world that they helped make. And I think, right. Honestly, like, the tropey problem with Dungeons & Dragons of people falling off the game is a lot of times investment, because, like, people might be having fun or whatever, but they're not necessarily invested in the story or their characters as much as they could be if you kind of give up a little bit of the control of creation and let them help build this thing along with you. And and I mean, it's also just very rewarding, frankly, to do that, because you get to see people really, really lean into this thing that you're making.
I was talking to somebody about this, about, like, that's how you solve murder hobos.
Yeah.
Is that if somebody's coming into something that they didn't have nothing to do with and they just want to watch the world burn, they're just going to watch the world burn. But if you make them create the world and, you know, name the shopkeeper and the stuff in this town, all of a sudden there's, like, I mean, some people just want to watch the world burn.
Right.
But, you know, there's a higher level of investment means, okay, maybe I don't want to, you know, just ruin this town by setting this inn on fire because it's funny, you know?
And I think that's decidedly true, because you just get, like, higher level of player investment in my experience, I guess. I have very limited experience, though. So as a DM, I've got literally, like, 3 games that I've DM'd. So maybe not, like, the best, like, sample size, but I've been playing tabletop RPGs for a very long time. And I'm not going to date myself by saying how long, but but it's definitely, like, things that I've seen where when the DM gives you, like, when the person running the game gives you the ability to, like, grab a hold of the reins occasionally and help steer the story, it makes you very much invested in the world and the characters and your fellow characters. You want to see what story, like, how their stories are going to progress, and you get to tell more in-depth stories. And now, that's not necessarily to say that, like, that's the only way that you can play tabletop RPGs, because I have a bunch of friends where we like to treat it more like a war game, where we just run, like, the Tomb of Annihilation and just meat grinder, right? Because, you know, everything's gonna die when you throw it in there. It's not a big deal. But the, you know, playing it more like a board game like that, but the most satisfying moments that I have when playing tabletop RPGs is when you have, like, you know, 5 to 7 people all sitting at a table who are all very much committed to this thing that, you know, it becomes like an acting exercise or an improv exercise where everyone is just passing the ball around and keeping everything running and afloat and just, like, really vibing. And it's one of the things that I very much like about Follow the Leader, because you can feel that sort of energy coming through when they play their various games.
Awesome. I feel like you just answered the why do you love it question that I was about to ask.
Oh no! New question! So... Quick! Load the question, Zuka!
Yeah.
No doubt.
Ka-chunk.
I guess, how did you find out about Follow the Leader?
Frankly, one of them, I can't remember who, somebody followed our podcast, and then I think their podcast followed us on Twitter, and I try to make an effort of every time somebody follows us, if it looks like it's not just, like, necessarily, like, because there's a lot of podcasts that just, like, scroll through a hash, or there's a lot of pages in general that, like, scroll through a hashtag and follow whatever's posting on that hashtag. But if it looks like it's somebody who's, like, legitimately coming to us and, like, kind of investing in our show, I go through the effort of going through their Twitter and seeing things about them and doing my best to kind of interact back with them to have that level of interaction. Then their podcast followed us. I'm like, what's a GM list? What is a podcast that's all GM list things? And then, you know, started listening to it from there. And then I guess we were all, the best thing is, like, we were both, like, basically both casts were kind of circling each other, like, too afraid to talk to the other one. And then we all started talking, and now we're all good friends.
That's good. I like stories like that. I like stories when it's like, I really liked this podcast, and then I talked to them, and now we're best friends.
We've had a surprising number of those.
Yeah.
I think podcasting people are just really good folks.
I think I mean,
sparkle.
Yeah. All right. Well, so now here's the famous too many RPGs question.
The final question.
Bum bum bum.
The final question.
No. Copyright strike.
Fill in the blank.
Okay.
If you like blank, you'll like Follow the Leader.
If you, all right, I'm just going to be super cheesy. If you like fan fiction, you'll like Follow the Leader because it has that same creative energy that a good fan fiction has of really loving the characters, of really understanding where they're going to go, but not being afraid to take them in different directions.
Awesome. That's very good. Yeah, that's a very good answer. Sometimes the cheesiest answers are the best ones, I guess. So where's the best place, in your opinion, to start with Follow the Leader? Like, can we just listen to the next episode? Should we start, you know, in a particular arc?
Yeah, I would definitely take the time to start at the beginning. Like, you could probably pick up from any arc and get into the show, but you definitely want to kind of, like, make sure that you get into the beginning of an arc. They label their episodes really well, though. All of their episodes are episode 7.1, 7.2. Like, every episode within an arc is like, an episode to point number sort of thing. So, as long as you start at the beginning of an arc, I don't think there's much of anything on their show that you will not get something good out of. Personally, I like the third arc because I think it really shows off a lot of the conceits and ideas that they have going on. But the fifth arc is also really good.
Awesome. And where can we find them?
Pretty much any podcasting app, from what I can tell. You know, Apple, like if you search for Follow the Leader in your preferred podcatcher, I think that you will find them. I don't know if they're on Spotify. I'm actually pulling up Spotify. I'm going to look.
And what's their Twitter?
It is at FTLcast. So F as in Frank, T as in Tom, L as in Lima, cast on Twitter.
Thank you for hanging out with us and answering some questions.
No, you're very welcome. I very much enjoy it.
If the people listening to this podcast have been like, wow, this Brian person sounds super cool, how can they join your fan club?
You can hit us up on the internet. We are The Room Where It Happened. You can hit us up on Twitter or Instagram at RoomwarePod. You can find our website. It's roomwarepod.com. We have new episodes every Monday. I haven't missed one yet.
That's impressive.
We're a very, very, very hacked up version of 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons that has a decidedly like narrative and character focused story. And if you like modern RunePunk setting, tons of LGBTQ characters, lots of swearing, and car chases, we're pretty much the perfect podcast for you.
Awesome. Thank you to Brian for sharing your love of Follow the Leader with us, Jeff for writing the music with me, and you, the audience. You're great.
If you are great, or have a creator in mind that we should contact for future episodes, you can contact us at Too Many RPGs, or Lauren at JL_NiceGirl.
Or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. I'm sorry, just the idea that all of these, like, I'm great, I should tweet them. If you like this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us spread the show to new people.
Too many RPGs!
Oh, that's good. I like that.